Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. Allison Skaberg here, Consolidated Planning Group. We are excited to bring a new presenter and a new topic to our webinar series. Today, we are going to be talking about that taboo topic of mental illness. And a lot of the families that we serve have a loved one with comorbid conditions. Maybe, you know, it kind of goes alongside ADHD or autism or Down syndrome or any number of the other diagnoses out there. But I know from my own personal experience that it's a tough road. Loving someone with mental illness and loving someone that has a lot of ups and downs with their daily life and kind of meeting them where they are and getting them the supports that they need to be as successful as they can be in life is challenging. And it's especially challenging when we have a loved one that may need more support than a 50-minute counseling session. When it, you know, we're looking at bigger things like, you know, outpatient therapy, partial hospitalization therapies, residential type therapies for mental illness. There's a lot of doors that people can walk through. And so we're going to be talking about some of that today. We are excited to have Angelina Hudson with us through NAMI, the National Association of Mental Illness, which provides a lot of hope and a lot of education to individuals and families of loved ones. So we're going to be talking about all of that today. I always like to go through a couple of housekeeping items. Today we are in webinar mode, and what that means is that we can't see you or hear you. Some people will be attending by podcast. Today's meeting is being recorded, so everybody that is registered will get a copy of today's slides as well as a link to the recording. All of our recordings after the fact are on the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel. We have almost 400 webinars on the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, partnering with you to advocate for your loved one with a disability. Topics all across the board, SSI, Medicaid, Medicaid waivers, special needs trust, guardianship, transition, college education for individuals with disabilities. It's all out there. So do check that out. You can subscribe to that for free. And we've really tried to title our webinars in such a manner so that way you can kind of look at the topics for the stuff that you're on in your planning journey. Consolidated Planning Group is a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We are an advisory and consulting firm. We're nationally certified as Social Security advisors, members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. People come to us because they want to plan for their loved one with a disability, plan for the future of their loved one when they're gone or when they're no longer able to provide the caregiving services that they once did. We help people put in place protection plans, lifetime care plans. We do a lot of transition planning. We help set up ABLE accounts. But very importantly, we help people preserve the eligibility for state and federally funded programs that are vital, a vital component to planning for the future of your loved one. So we always offer free personalized consultations. If you haven't met with us before, there'll be a QR code at the end of this meeting today where you can schedule yourself a free personalized consultation. We aim to build on the planning that you've done so far. Very few financial advisors have any background in special needs. And when it comes to special needs planning, your situation is specialized. And it's really, really important that you work with a specialist because of preserving that eligibility for state and federally funded programs. So we're never here to rain on any great planning that you've already done, but build on that solid foundation that you've already set up and make sure that your loved one with a disability is set up for success in the future. So having said that, welcome, Angelina, and we're going to let you take it away. I do invite everybody to put their questions in the chat box as usual. We'll be monitoring that chat box, and we'll get to as many questions as we can today. We are going for an hour, so if you're planning your day, you can know that we will be done by 1 o'clock. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Allison. I sincerely appreciate you inviting NAMI to share today. Today, I'm going to share a little bit about NAMI and also a little bit about my own journey on how to create a future in a realistic way when you are dealing with a loved one, a child, a spouse, a sibling, where you're trying to live your life and manage someone else's life at the same time. I'll start off with an introduction, then go into my own journey, and then spill over into what NAMI provides, the predictable stages of emotional response, the psychoeducation and support that we offer, and then some takeaways on where to build your community resources. It's a journey. So I wanted to start off by talking about how mental illness and mental health conditions are really obscure. You know, we think we know what we are, but most of the information that people have about mental health conditions, it comes from cinema, you know, the horror movies, or it comes from the news, what you hear sensationalized. And usually what you hear on the news as it relates to mental illness is a person that is not being treated, or somehow their recovery is not in place yet. They're not having a good day if they end up on the news related to their mental health condition. So that is not, so the news and the cinema is not the place where we can get our best information, but yet that's where most people get their information. And the other obscure thing about mental health conditions is that some of the best things that happen in our life, the birth of a child, graduating from college, getting married, these are all things we look forward to throughout our lives, throughout the lives of our children. But yet those stressors, even though they are wonderful and beautiful events that we applaud and celebrate, they also bring with them a lot of stress. And stress is one of the number one triggers to an underlying mental health condition that may have not blossomed yet. So I want to get into a few stats. The numbers are real and the numbers are staggering. American children under 18 years old, 12% will be diagnosed with a mental illness in any given year. Something that is diagnosable. So that means it's not flying under the radar. It's not something you can manage. It is something that you will need professional help to deal with. If 12% is the documented number, then you can only imagine how many more children are really not diagnosed. They don't end up getting treatment. Many times those children get punishment, right? Because behavior is the hallmark of mental health conditions. All right. And what we also know based on the research is that out of all adults who are ever diagnosed with mental illness, the signs are usually diagnosable or recognizable by age 14. And 75% of all adult cases are recognizable by age 24. So what we know is somewhere between 14 and 24, if a person is going to have a mental health condition in their adult years, we tend to see it in that age range. So that's just when a child is going through their adolescent years, moving on into adulthood. You might be saying, high five, we got them out the house, only to learn that that child has got to move back home because something has happened to their brain development. In addition to that, talking about children again, 50% of children who are diagnosed or may not be diagnosed, they end up dropping out of school. They tend to have poor performance academically. They get in trouble. They have low self-esteem. They don't seem to fit in. And so we run the risk now of having children that for whatever reason, they can't thrive in an academic setting. They miss a lot of school, or they get put out of school. You change schools. I remember when my youngest son graduated high school, I changed my phone number. I was so tired of the school calling me. Also, 70% of those who are in the juvenile justice program have a diagnosable mental health condition. So this is an alarming number. And I always tell people statistics mean nothing when this is you. If this happens to your family, you know, you really don't bother with the statistics up front. But it's enough of a crisis where we should all be talking about it, especially since when you look at 90% of the suicides among teens, and that's the second leading cause of death among teens, suicide. Second, the thing that comes first is accidents. So only second to accidents, our babies are dying by suicide, and 90% of those have a diagnosable mental health condition. So it's very important that you develop a team. If you find yourself in this area where you're raising a child with a mental health condition, you just can't do it by yourself. You're going to get discouraged. You're going to feel some shame, blame. You want to may feel some guilt. I think it's over 80% of families, up to 88% of families that have a disability end in divorce. It really takes a toll on the marriage. Stigma, misinformation, blaming each other. It really divides us. It silences us. It makes us want to like hold it all in. But if we don't reach out and get a team to help us with this, it's just not as successful an outcome as if you put together a team. And so I want to talk a little bit about how to do that. So right now, we know that there are early signs and symptoms of mental health conditions. And if the disability that you're struggling with is not mental illness, comorbidity is very high with other medical conditions. So if a young person in your family, or even your spouse or sibling or parents or loved one, if there's another medical condition, chances are if it's chronic, if it's painful, if it takes the quality of their life away, mental health is going to tag along. Mental illness is going to tag along. Depression, isolation. And so what we know, especially in younger children, they don't do as well in school if they're struggling in this way because it's an added problem, right? They have the normal developmental issues, but they also become, they feel in their perceptions that they're being ridiculed. They're not adding up to others. They feel rejected. They have a lot of adjustments related to their mood and behavior when they're diagnosed. But you can only imagine how horrible it is if they're not diagnosed, because then you're blaming them for their behavior and they don't understand where it's coming from. All right.
I'd love to talk about the diagnosis factor, because sometimes some of the issue is access. Some of this testing and the neuropsych testing and the learning disability testing, some of this other testing is pretty expensive. I mean, you could be spending upwards of $3,000 on
3,000.
some of the testing. Do you
I'm
have
so
any
glad
advice
you. I do. I
for
do.
that?
I have a little known secret. You want to hear it? The public health system. So, my husband and I, we consider ourselves middle class. We both have, graduate degrees. We both work very hard. We fell upon a period of time where we didn't have insurance. And we didn't just have one child diagnosed, too, but we had a third child that the school says, Houston, we have a problem. And we wanted to do our own independent testing. And of course, like you mentioned, if you don't have insurance, that's when I learned. Now, this was about 20 years ago, that full individual evaluation, psycho evaluation, was $2,800. And so I just walked into the front door of Mentop Hospital, which is a part of Harris Health System. I walked right in and I went to the front desk and I said, I need to talk to your neurological department. And they said, you need to do what? And I just said, I need to talk to the neurologist, here in your hospital. They got me up to that floor. I said, I don't have insurance. The school is saying my child needs to be tested. They actually put me on a wait list. The wait list was shorter than the wait list from when I had insurance. That wait list was a year. I had no insurance. This wait list was 3 months. They tested my son. I took that test, that full individual evaluation, back to the school. And the other very surprising thing is when the doctor walked in to test my third child, my son, he was the same doctor that tested my first son at the renowned Meyer Clinic at Texas Children's Hospital. And I asked him, what are you doing here? And he said, this is a teaching hospital. And I supervise the doctors that are here doing the same tests that we do at Texas Children. The other thing you need to know is if you have no insurance at all, and we didn't at that time, and I don't know if you can just, it's been 20 years, so I don't know if you can just walk into Bentop like I did, but there's the local mental health authority in Harris County, that's called the Harris Center. In Montgomery County, it's Tri-County Services. In Fort Bend, it's Texana. But that's what qualifies you for services, that you don't have insurance. So there are ways to get tested, even if you don't have insurance.
I'm glad that you brought up the LIDA, the Local Intellectual Disability Authority. If you have attended our webinars in the past, you may have heard us talk about this before. The local intellectual disability authority is where you get on those waiver interest lists, like
Yes.
HCS, Texas Home Living. And when you get on those lists, then they'll put you on a waiting list for testing. They do have diagnosticians and that are MDs or DOs that actually do that testing. So that may be another way that testing
Yes.
could be free. And then the third way that comes to me that could be a free way of the neuropsych testing is if your loved one is involved with vocational rehab, VR. When they get into VR, VR does a considerable amount of testing. They do a vocational evaluation, and oftentimes they're going to do a neuropsych testing. If you suspect mental illness or you suspect learning disabilities, oftentimes they will do that testing, and that too would be covered. So I just wanted to point that out because I think a lot of times people put off the testing because of the ridiculous cost that comes with it. And the thing is, the reality of it is in the neuropsych testing, even if you have group health insurance, is often not covered by group health insurance unless there is a particular condition that is causing neuro decline, like maybe chemo, for instance. Maybe a kid had cancer and they have chemo. They've had chemo and they've had a cognitive decline as a result of that, then it might be paid for. But for the most part, group health insurance generally does not pay for these types of services.
Right. So thank you for that because I forgot about VR services. That's if the child is older, right? These three, this is my crew, and it's really my journey of hope. That's what I call my story. When we decided to have children, we had no idea what we were embarking upon. Two of them were already here before we found out that any of them had neurological disorders, and all three of them do. One that brought us to NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is the one with the little hat that doesn't wear a tie. He still doesn't wear ties. And he didn't get a good diagnosis for 7 years. He was like Helen Keller. He didn't speak. He didn't have expressive language. He didn't have receptive language. Olivia was here. She's oldest. And I thought she had no problem until she started school. When she started school, the school started calling me every week. They thought she had auditory. They thought she had a hard of hearing or some degree of deafness. We had to do a very expensive, and the insurance did not cover this test, an ABR. And I cleaned out our savings account and I paid for the test, even though my husband told me not to. And we found out that she could hear just fine. And that broke my heart because that meant then that there was something neurologically wrong with her brain. And so she was then diagnosed with auditory processing disorder, which falls under the umbrella of ADHD. And that's what I want to say right here. You have to get a full evaluation. You can even get free testing from the school. The school will do independent testing. But until you go to a hospital or a clinic, you're not going to get the MRI and the PET scan and the genetic testing and the blood work. All of that gives you a full picture of what's going on with that child's brain. And another way to document decline in neurological function is documented regression at the school. So if a child goes to school 1 year, let's say first grade, second grade, they're off for the summer and go back the next year, you can document regression. And sometimes your PCP can write a letter to the insurance company to allow for additional testing. And that's what we had to do. Even dental work, a lot of dental work is not covered, but you can get it covered if you have a really good relationship with your PCP. And if you don't, get another PCP. There's always a primary care physician that will hear your story, have compassion for your plight, and work with you. Yes, Allison.
I wanted to mention that we've done a lot of webinars with special education advocates where they provide guidance on how to request services, how to request testing in the school. I mean, we're coming around spring break here, and so we're coming around to the end of the school year. So it's time, if you're wanting to request testing with the school, you need to request that in writing. Is one thing. And it's true that the schools do testing, but they may not do all the testing that your child needs. It's what they think the child needs, and it might not be in agreement with what you think your child needs. So I have been a fan, as a parent with kids with disabilities, I've been a fan of the school testing, but getting my own outside testing, comparing those notes. And so someone in the chat box indicated that they had testing, and basically everybody agrees with the diagnosis except for the school. The school is not accepting those diagnoses. And there is help and support for you. And again, a special education advocate should get involved. Texas Partners Resource Network also is helpful in the ARD process and getting involved with school, some of these school issues. So it's true that the school doesn't have to agree with an MD diagnosis, but if it's clear and it's kind of across the board, then that would be something I, as a parent, would pursue and fight. And if I had to get a special education advocate on my side in that regard, I would probably do that. But requesting testing for the school, it does need to be in writing. It's not a casual conversation with the teacher outside of the class or in the bus line or something like that. It really needs to be in writing because they have so many days to respond to you in writing. So I just wanted to
mention that. Yes, that's correct, Allison. Everything you do really has to be in writing. So I was on a 1-year wait list. I sat in a waiting room outside of an MR exam room. There were all of these Monets on the wall. I remember that. And this was the day that really changed my life forever. So I tell people that I work for NAMI. I'm the executive director now. But honestly, my first title is just wife and mom, you know, and that's the way I approach the work with NAMI, and not just me, but all of our volunteers. We are a peer-led organization, and so we help other families because NAMI has helped us. And so that day, if anyone wants to know the day that changed my life, it was not the day I got married or graduated from college. It was the day that my son was diagnosed with a brain disorder that was not, there was no fix. So we had to learn how to manage. So my introduction to NAMI came from going to school, and the schools were asking me, what do you want? Ms. Hudson, what do you want? What are you asking us for? Well, of course, I didn't know what to ask for. So I started visiting different special ed programs, you know, and really pretending as though I was moving into those communities. In Lantern Lane Elementary, I met Michael and Valerie Biasini. These two individuals, just true saints, are also NAMI teachers, but I didn't know that. And before I left the meeting that day, Michael Biasini asked me, what are you doing? What are you looking for? And so I gave him my whole story. He said, you need to join the class called Visions for Tomorrow. We now call that class NAMI Basics. It's 6 weeks, one session a week, 2.5-inch binder of material this big. You get this big binder chock full of all these resources. And it's peppered with not only the research evidence-based curriculum, but also lived experiences, anecdotal information on just what can you do to thrive and live with dignity and respect when you have a child that's acting very animalistic, you know, because of the brain disorder. The classes are always led by facilitators with lived experience. And if you can go through the next couple of bullets, what I took away from that class is that it wasn't just my son impacted. It was the whole family. Duh. I didn't really know that until they shared it with me, how the dynamic of the family. And as the mom, I need to consider everyone's needs, but first my own. The different types of mental health care professionals, that I shouldn't just go to one particular type of doctor and look for everything. Different professionals offer different types of support. I got an overview of the public mental health care system. So when the third child, you know, we thought we had dodged the bullet, but by the time he was three, we knew we were in deep water with that third child. And so I learned how to use my voice to get services from a public health care system for which I had never participated before. I learned how to advocate at the school level, how to advocate with extended family. I learned how to communicate to the doctor, to my extended family, and to the school in a way that made me feel that I had the wherewithal. You know, I knew what I was talking about. I was using the right terminology. I learned how to prepare for and respond to crisis. There will be a crisis. If you're dealing with a child with any disability and you have to leave your house and interface with the world, one day you're going to have a crisis and you have to be prepared for that. And this class taught me how to do that. But the single most important thing was how to take care of myself so that I could rise to the occasion. All right, Allison.
Are these classes free?
Yeah.
Can people sign up and participate in these classes? And I know before COVID, the classes were mostly in person, but then since COVID, you've got a combination of in person and online, or are they all online now?
So this is the first semester, spring of 2024. We have 18 classes and only two of them are online. We have released our classes back into the community again. It is the best way to absorb. You get as much learning from the teachers as you do the other families in the class, and no two families are dealing with the same exact issue. So we don't, you're not required to only have one diagnosis. So we have a myriad of diagnoses and comorbidities and different family dynamics. And believe me, you will find yourself in these classes. At first, I thought I had nothing to offer. I was so broken when I went to that first class 28 years ago. But I found that even I had something to offer. And so it's a group learning experience, and they're free. We do not charge the families. And you can take the class over and over and over again. I took it five times because, you just get different things from different teachers.
And also, like for the stuff that you're on at that time, and I know I participated in the parent class several years ago that was very, very valuable. It actually was online, but it was valuable in connecting other parents that are dealing with similar issues because I think one of the things that is pretty common is the isolation. It just
Oh, yeah.
feels isolating, like how often you can't even, you know, talk to your own family about some of these issues, and people that don't eat, sleep, and breathe it, they don't understand it. And so
They don't live what you live
oftentimes
with.
as parents, we choose not to talk about it, which is probably a deficit to ourselves. But I would say that this class was, it was very much worth the time, and the material was very, very well put together. And one of the things that I've seen, and I think it's a national crisis. I think we have a mental health national crisis on how we address things. As you know, we've got people that have crisis, and they take their loved one to a mental hospital where they're released 72 hours later with nowhere to go, and all they did was put a Band-Aid on the issue. And the places that they can go have long waiting lists, or maybe no access because they don't take insurance or other things like that. So it's you know, the crisis intervention is a quick shot, but it's not the answer to the whole, you know, to the whole situation. And it's a much longer term supports. And what I found is that those longer term supports are difficult to find. And furthermore, they may not be in your area. They may not
Right.
be in your
Not in
state.
Texas. Right.
That you are in, but there are definitely services out there that can help you find the care that you need. But even those are hard to find. You have to beg, borrow, and steal to find those services to get the help that you need.
Exactly. And so the classes that we offer have a three-prong approach, the biopsychosocial approach. Okay. Bio means yes, go to the doctor, go to the clinicians, get your diagnosis, understand what the treatment plan is. But that's only going to be one very, very important part. There's two more areas you're going to have to pay attention to. One is psychological. How much is your loved one going to participate in their own recovery process? And the earlier you get them in the driver's seat of their own recovery plan, the better off you are. So I started very quickly getting my whole family involved in what was going to be the outcome for their life, driven and dictated by them. You have to start very early and be very honest about what they're dealing with. And what I also found is because I had all of the medical information, like I had the MRI, I had the blood tests, I did the neurological testing. Even my youngest son, who was very rebellious against the term mental illness, He accepted the medical diagnosis. So I didn't care what he called it, as long as he was willing to face it and deal with it. The psychological, so biological is what are you diagnosed with? What are you dealing with? Psychological is how does it impact you and what are you willing to do about it? How much of it are you going to take responsibility for? And then the social part is find your people. Find people who are going to support you. Find people who are not going to criticize you, blame you, hurt you, damage your family. And those people exist, and a lot of those people are with NAMI. All right. This is a very, there's three very important slides. This is one of them. The very first class, NAMI, all NAMI classes talk about the predictable stages of emotional reaction. Everyone who has experienced a trauma is going to go through and cycle through back and forth these stages 1, 2, and 3, regardless of the trauma. And NAMI informed me that having a child with a disability was a trauma. I didn't even know that. If you have a child with a disability, you counted 10 fingers and 10 toes on the day they were born. You thought you had got that child here, you were scot-free. And then you find out later on that you have this very significant chronic lifelong illness. That is a trauma, not just to you, though, but to every member of the family. So when I walked into that first class 28 years ago, I wanted to divorce my husband. I wanted to stop talking to my parents because I couldn't understand why they were stuck in stage one. I didn't know there was a stage one, and I had moved on to stage three. The research that NAMI adds to this body of research, stages 1, 2, and 3, is what you need when you're in each stage. So if you look underneath 1, 2, and 3, there's a list of what you need. When you first get traumatized or you're in this journey and you don't know what's happened to you, this gives you a lot of language and understanding. So you can flip over from the side of your brain where you're emotionally charged and dealing with all of these experiences and start using some of your logic and reasoning. And it's a big relief to a fire that's going on in the inside. So the predictable stages of emotional reactions helped me stay married. I made 30 years last week, and it helped me really accept the support from my family, understanding that they were grieving too, and they were in their own process. Once I understood that, we could all get along.
This is really so powerful, and and we've done hundreds and hundreds of webinars and talks and education of families, and I've really never heard it put that way, but it is true, like grieving of what you thought it should have been. I mean, I think maybe we've
It's a
heard
lot.
that, going through the process of guardianship of our kids or something like that, that there's a bit of a grieving process with that of what should have been or what could have been or things like that. But I think it I just never heard it put this way, and it's just so true. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So with all that we learned through NAMI, the basic principles of NAMI is you are the expert. We give you the information, the research. We give you all of the terminology. There's a little dictionary in every chapter, all of the resources, and we put you in the driver's seat of where your goal is for your family or your spouse or whoever you're managing. You don't need to know everything all at once. You can't know anything that anyone that no one has ever told you. So a lot of people come to our classes and they feel guilty. But guess what? You can't know what no one has ever told you, and it's no one's fault. These illnesses are genetically predisposed. The widest held cause of mental health conditions is that there's an underlying predisposition and then an environmental impact. I tell everybody my ch children's impact in the environment was just birth. I don't know what else it was. It was birth. But the challenge that the society faces is that 13% of youth 8 to 15 are going to deal with a severe mental illness, and that jumps to 21% when you go up to age 18. We already talked about most cases of all adults diagnosed fall somewhere between ages 14 and 25 is when you're going to notice that there's a problem. But the bigger crisis, if you ask me, is that we're in such denial. There's so much stigma, shame, blame, and guilt that it takes 8 to 10 years before a family will seek help. It takes 8 to 10 years. I've been talking to a family for 30 years. I'm telling you the truth. Yesterday, they registered for their first NAMI class. They finally, as a couple, agree that there's a mental health condition on board. But you know what? Better late than never. And I think that family is really going to turn around. 50% of all high school students drop out when they have a mental health condition. I think I brought this up earlier. 70% in the juvenile are going into incarceration, and the suicide is the second leading cause of death. But it doesn't have to happen. Treatment is available. And the more you're armed with information, research, and just resources, the better off the outcomes are going to be. But if it's not treated, if there is no diagnosis, if that never comes, that illness is not going to go away. It's only going to get more severe. It's going to be more difficult to treat. And then it's a poor lifetime prognosis, because then, of course, people start self-medicating. They get in trouble with law enforcement. So what you're looking for is someone who's not able to take care of their daily function. They just don't seem to mature and take care of their responsibilities. And they may not want to go to school, or they can't keep a job, and they just don't get along with people. Either they don't get along with people at home, they don't get along with people in the public, or they don't get along with anyone. When you see those three things, you know you need a diagnosis. Yes, Allison.
Angelina, I know at one point in Fort Bend County, the Fort Bend County Juvenile Justice System had quote unquote tours. I forget what it was called, but it was free, and it was really for parents with young folks that are getting in trouble quite frequently. It is kind of maybe
It was
called a
called,
scared straight
there it
type
is. It was
program.
called, it was called Scared Straight. I don't know. They have a youth focus initiative right now. I don't, and they also had a boot camp years ago. But you know, just if I could permission to speak freely, I had one of the three that had issues with authority. Had issues with authority. And what I recognized is that it was never black and white to him. It was never right or wrong, yes or no. That was not the problem. His judgment was off. His idea of, he always in his mind was on the side of right. So once we started getting an understanding of what his thought processes were, and then go and walk through those thought processes with him, he was able to understand us better, and we were able to understand him better. But we had to remove judgment. Whenever there was judgment, that shut down learning. But whenever he could trust the fact that he could mess up and then repair the rupture, then he started opening up and telling us his real thoughts, which were all messed up. But he trusted us enough to get it right. And I think if you have mental illness and not just, you know, someone who's testing the boundaries, right? Is all development, you know, all children will develop and test boundaries. But if you have something more than that and their thinking is not quite on point, then I think there are other ways to try to get that person to learn how not to break the law, how not to use drugs, how not, you know. And so we went through all of that. And so it's how far are you going to go? How much are you going to do? How much will we as adults commit to? I always tell people the only thing wrong with children are adults. Something wrong with children.
We had a question, and that, you're so right. It's probably true. We're always on them, aren't we? We had a question in the chat box if we are going to discuss disabled adult children who develop mental illness, and that I've asked that clarification of that question. But one of the things, I mean, I would like to discuss, because I know that we've seen this in some of the families that we've served over the years with a primary diagnosis of autism or autism spectrum disorder, with maybe mental illness not rearing its head until, say, 18 to 22, and then seeing things like schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia, or other things like that. Where do they go? Where do they
So
go
here
for
we, can
support?
you go to the, can you go up a few slides? I'll tell you when, because I'm looking at the time. Let's go to the next one. Yeah, we can skip this one and probably the next two. Yeah, skip this one, because I don't think I have to convince anyone here that you got to get psychiatric. You got to get a real solid diagnosis. That's what this is about. Why do you need a psychiatric? Because you do know that there's some parents that don't want an evaluation. They're very much afraid of the label. But I don't think that's this group. So let's get to the what do you do? That'll be the next. Yes, this is the first one. Okay, so this slide was the first research-based framework, and it was not designed for children with mental illness. It was not designed for children with disability. It was just designed for children. And the research said the kids that had 80% of these assets did better in life. No, 80% of the predictability of whether a child would be successful in life was the more assets they had, these 40 developmental assets. And if you go to this website, it actually gives you a step-by-step by age group, elementary, middle school, high school, of how to get these assets imbued in your children. What do you do? And the number one thing I figured out was I couldn't do it by myself. I went to several different church programs. I used a lot of different children's programs. I even found a camp for kids for with kids for special needs called Camp Blessing. And then I found another one called Blessed and Beyond. All of these people have helped to shape and mold my children because I couldn't do it by myself. And I had three children, so they all individually needed something. But if you go to the slide right after this one, all my children are now adults. So there's SAMHSA, SAMHSA.gov, SAMHSA. They have a lot of research-based information and resource on this website, .gov, SAMHSA.gov. And one of them is the eight dimensions of wellness. And every adult, if you want to have longevity in life and if you want to live your best life, you're going to pay attention to these eight dimensions of wellness. Some people do this naturally, but kids with disability and kids with mental health condition, they need a framework because they're not going to keep up with all of these. They're not even going to consider all of this, right? So this is a framework that I have been training. I bribe my children. I take them out to dinner at their favorite restaurant. And before dinner hits the table, I pull out my notebook. I open it up to the eight dimensions of wellness. And I want to know what they're doing for all of the eight different areas. I want to know what they're doing. And it's just repetition, 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 repetition. And I don't know why they act like they forget that I'm gonna do this every time we go out to dinner, but they do. They forget. And then the next time they're like, oh, here she goes again. So, but even if they don't do it, this is something you can use. I have a son with autism, right? So he's not gonna read this and think, oh, what can I do? He's not gonna do that. So I orchestrate his life and I set it up where he has activities. He does not work, he does volunteer work. And, I'm preparing him a home. As a matter of fact, I looked on your website, Consolidated Planning Group, and I've already typed a question to you for me and my next stage of planning. But I do believe that if you get the best information out there for what resources are available to build this construct, they are there. And then the part that helps you not fall apart is support. And NAMI does that for free. We also have support groups. So we have psychoeducation, and then we have support groups. And we have facilitators that have been running these groups for 20 years because we walk the journey with you. And they're peer-led, peer-facilitated. We have groups for the person who has the mental health condition, and we have groups for the family members that care for them. Can you go to the next slide? This is the language of NAMI. The language of NAMI is a list of our principles of support that are upheld in our support groups. But I wanted you to just see these because this is something we rehearse in every single support group before we start. This is the foundation of why we meet. And that is, we see the illness is separate from the person, right? The mental illness is really just a medical condition. It's not their fault. It's traumatic. We're looking for better coping skills. Every time we get together, we find strength in sharing. This breaks the isolation, right? Many times our NAMI families are closer to us than our biological families. Because as you stated earlier, Allison, if you're not walking this journey, you really don't know. You really don't know. We forgive ourselves, we reject guilt, and I'll go to the last one, and we'll never give up hope. But of course, you can have these slides and you can go to any support group and you're going to rehearse these principles every single time.
You know, Angelina, sometimes I think people are reticent to, attend a support group
Oh. I was the worst.
Because they think, well, I'm already down. This is already tough. This life is tough, and I don't need to go hear everybody else dump their bucket. It'll be negative. And so I think sometimes people reject the support groups for that reason. Tell us about your groups and how it can help some of our parents cope with what they're dealing with. And then the other thing I want you to address, because you talked about guilt earlier and the guilt that a parent feels that it's their fault or whatever, or even sometimes the guilt of how you respond. Has your kid self-harmed, cut their arm up, and you, instead of responding with love, you are angry and you feel guilt about that, or things like that. Now, talk to us about both of those components.
Okay, so the first thing was the support group. I so appreciate the support. I was 7 years I wouldn't go to a support group. I said I can cry by myself, and I'm not going to go into a support group and tell everybody my business. That's not how I am. That's not how I was raised. When I finally went, because I'd gone to the class 5 times. So I said, well, let me try the support group. So I went to the support group. There's a model. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It is not a care and share where you tell your whole life story and everybody goes around in a circle and cry. No, the model is set up to where everybody only shares in 1 or 2 minutes what's going on right now. The facilitator, who's been trained to facilitate, works through everything that was brought up in check-in in a certain order. Hot potatoes first, pressing dilemmas. There's a way to do it. And then the way we unpack and share with one another is we use four structures and 3 processes. You have no idea what I'm talking about, but you just have to go. And every group ends on an up note. I so appreciated this model that I became a state trainer, and now I'm a national trainer for the family support group model for NAMI. So just know that it is not what you think it is, and you won't understand it until you go. And if you go to a group that brings you down in the Houston area, you call me, because then I got to go retrain some people, because these are wonderful groups and they're free. The best thing you can do to equip yourself is to get resources and facts, get the information, find out the facts of what you're dealing with, and then understand how it impacts you. If you know 2 people with bipolar disorder, you don't know 2 people that have the same, they don't present the same. 2 kids with autism do not present the same. Two seniors that have had a stroke, they won't look the same. So you have to not only understand the illness and the prognosis and the best practices, but then you have to know what's happening in your house. You have to know the personality of your loved one, and you have to really be honest with yourself. What are you going to do? And what are you not going to do? Right? And so, and I had to do that with 3 kids. I'm so glad we didn't have more than 3. I don't think I could have withstood any more of these. What I have listed on this particular slide are the other classes. Family to family is if you have an adult who's diagnosed. Peer to peer is if it's you. Many times the family members will go to a class and then ask or bribe their loved one to go to a class as well. The basics class is for parents of children under 18. Then there are support groups. And then, of course, presentations like this. And if you have a church or a synagogue or another group that you work with, a philanthropy group or something, and you want us to come and present, we'll come and present there too. So our work is public awareness. Okay, we can go to the next.
And so some of these groups for parents, are you equipping parents of how to maybe more effectively communicate and meet their loved one where they are?
Yes.
Like
there's a whole class.
I think sometimes, yes, we need help with that.
Yeah.
Sometimes, it's not cookie cutter and it's not crystal clear on how to effectively reach the person that we love. And so I think help in that area. And I know that like DBT therapy kind of can help with meeting them where they are.
Yeah, all of the therapies are listed for the loved one. But for the parent, yes, there's communication skills. There's a whole series on letting it go. Sometimes there's some things we just got to let go, and then you also have to have boundaries. Some families need work with setting up better boundaries so that their whole life is not engulfed, right? So These classes are very thorough. And if you go to the next slide, there's a list of resources. And I wanted to say this right off the bat. No one paid me to put these names on this slide. I'm not getting any kickbacks here. These are community-based resources in the greater Houston area that I used with my family. This is not an exhaustive list, but these are organizations that have been helpful to me. And so because they've been tried and true with me, I thought I would share them here. So I just went down the list. Underneath the umbrella of ADHD, there's a lot of other issues. I don't know if you know, right? There's anxiety, there's under autism, there's OCD, there's Tourette's, there's a lot of different issues. So even though I may only mention one diagnosis, I have a child with bipolar disorder, I have a child with autism, I probably deal with a little bit of all of this underneath. Oh, eating disorders. I didn't have to use that one personally, but it's the Eating Recovery Center. Eating recovery centers. They're very good. They work very much like NAMI. That's why they're peer led and peer facilitated, and they're very effective. But these are all online, and you can get more information about them. Family to Family Network was just a godsend because I actually
Right.
understood that my son had autism before he was ever diagnosed with autism. It took them 7 years, but I kind of worked with
We
Mary.
love them. They are a wonderful
They
support, the
are.
Family to
They are.
Family Network. Another person that I wanted to share, there is a psychologist, Dr. Tara Devine, Dr. Tara Coker Devine.
Okay.
And she used to be at Monarch years ago. She is in the greater Houston area, and she is known for working with parents that have neurodiverse kids. And so when you mentioned boundaries, kind of self-care and some of that stuff, and I would say that probably a lot of parents are struggling in that department with the boundaries and the self-care. She is really fantastic. And that was Tara Coker Devine,
Tara Coker Devine.
DeVine. So
Also,
I just wanted to mention her because I know that she is awesome and she's in the greater Houston area.
one of the ways I found out a lot of about all of these services, we did not have the ability to send our son to Monarch, right? I think Monarch tuition was the same as our house note, right? So we couldn't do it. And so what we did, I talked to the principal and they allowed us to go to the parent information days and the resource fairs. And so that was very nice of them. And they may still do that, but there's a lot more available now. There's more fairs for autism now than there used to be. If this is not you and you're here to get information because you have a family that you just want to be supportive of, I encourage you to treat mental illnesses like any other illness. Most of the time, if someone says, "Oh, well, my daughter's in the hospital with schizophrenia," then you go, "Oh," and you walk away. You don't say anything. Well, that's like the worst thing because the family is already feeling shame, and if they opened up to you, they really want support. So do what you would do if they said, "My daughter broke her leg." You know what I'm saying? Provide a meal if you can, visit them, send cards, offer prayer, whatever it is that you do, ask them if you can come and help them with something, but don't ignore them and act like it's not happening. I think that is the most hurtful thing that I've heard our families talk about, that they feel ostracized. Another thing you can do is join the largest advocacy event of the year, which is the NAMI Walk. We do it every year. This is year 18. What makes this walk so special is that all of the psychiatric hospitals, all the hospitals and clinics that serve this population are there in their shorts and t-shirts, and they can answer questions that they couldn't answer over the phone, or they couldn't answer if you walked in off the street. But because they're in this family festival type atmosphere, they can share things with you about their practices and you can ask questions, and they're very approachable. Also, other families are there, other adult children are there. My 28-year-old, he's asking me every day to make sure that he's there on May 18th. There is no cost to participate. It is a fundraiser, but there is no cost. You can just join a team. You can come. You can bring your family. But most of all, bring your loved ones that have these disabling conditions, because this is a place where everybody understands and they're going to get a whole lot of love at this event. It's our Day of Hope. So, our United Day of Hope. So, we hope you're able to join us. and also the CPG team as well. We hope your group can come on that day as well. But if you go to this website, you'll get all of the information. Oh, thank you for putting Dr. Tara Coker Devine's number in here.
Yes, she
Yes.
is awesome.
But
Tell if
yes, go
y'all
to
call her, tell her I sent you. She is wonderful, and you will thank me later. She's so knowledgeable about our loved ones with disabilities and the neurodiversity, and helping you be who you want to be in the face of whatever you're dealing with your loved one. And she's a powerhouse. So anyway,
All
so
right, I may have to
May
call her
18th.
myself. I may have to give her a call myself. But are there any more? I would hate to end and we not have any lingering questions out there. Oh, this book.
Tell us about this
Yes.
book.
Yes. I usually have a copy right here to hold up. But this book was designed by our medical director. So NAMI is all over the country. We have over 600 affiliates in every state. And in every state, we offer the same Fidelitas program. So what you find in Texas, you're going to find everywhere else. Well, the medical director put together this book, You Are Not Alone. It's on Amazon.com. The first half of the book, he has accepted questions from all over the country and had them answered by the experts in those fields. So the hot off the press, most current research-based answers are in the front half of the book for every question related to a mental health condition and being the caregiver. And then the second half of the book is a collection of about 80 different families and their stories. I think I'm in there. So get the book because you'll find yourself in this book and it's healing and it provides a lot of hope.
I love that. Thank you. And is that you, did you say that book could be found on Amazon?
Amazon.com. You are not alone. This,
Okay.
yeah, the first picture of us was us back when we found NAMI and were struggling. This is us now. Yeah, that was then. This is us now. I am very happy that we made it. That's the person, you know, when they, and then there's one more little picture. I got a new grandbaby. And so when I first started this journey, y'all, I did not think I was going to make it. I wanted to give my children away and check myself into Spring Shadows Glen. If you're not old enough, you don't know what that is. But I did not think I could do this. And I'm so glad that I found the information, the support, and the resources to not only make it, but actually thrive in this journey. And these are the three people. I think I have one more slide. Is it the thank you? Oh, well, don't give up hope. But the last slide is my number and my email if you want to call me. But I just want you to know that I did not, when I first started, I did not think I was going to make it here. So if that's you, if you are just holding on by the end of your rope, just know that things do get better, but they get better with the right information and the right resources. So we're here for you. We don't charge the families we serve. We cost a lot, but we don't charge the families we serve. And we're here to support you if you need us.
Someone has a question out here that says, are there programs that can be used to gain back or maintain guardianship to help children who have gone through traumatic situations over the age of 18? I know that once children are adults, they can refuse services. So
Sure.
I can, there definitely are. I mean, this would be in attorney involvement, and we're definitely happy to make that referral. A person, if they need guardianship, a guardianship can be obtained anytime after age 18. So you didn't have to strike at age 18. If a person later needs guardianship and they're 37 or 82, then
Right.
there are forms that have to be filled out. It has to be signed off on by a doctor. You would need an attorney involvement. But we definitely have attorneys that we can refer to for that particular scenario. And it is true that sometimes that does happen, where they once were able to not be a threat to themselves or others, but now they're not. And so sometimes, in Texas, and all states are different, it's the law is the least restrictive, most appropriate for the ward, WARD, for the individual. Least restrictive, most appropriate. So they're going to take into consideration all of those things. But it's not, I mean, of course, a child under age 18, nobody needs guardianship. You already have that. But over 18, if they cannot handle things themselves, or they are a threat to themselves or others, or there's a whole long list of things that
And there's
may
shared, there's also
be.
shared decision making and the power of medical training. I mean, there's different levels of if you because sometimes you have some that act up, you don't want guardianship because you don't want the liability, right? So you can there's different types of oversight that you can do with another adult.
Yeah, and I think there are some misconceptions of the liability that comes in place. There's some things but like if a person under guardianship kills somebody, the parent isn't really liable for that. And I think that there's some misconceptions with that. There is, to your point, the supported decision-making agreement, power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney. The healthcare power of attorney becomes active when the person is incapacitated or unable to make decisions themselves. So if we have a person, I think that this is a slippery slope, because sometimes with mental illness, the person is clearly angry, but
But they're
maybe
not
they
in their
don't
right.
have an, they may not have an intellectual disability, but they may not be in their right mind due to medications or lack thereof, the medications that they should be taking. And so that is where a definitive conversation with a guardianship attorney, and there would be a guardian ad litem that would be appointed. And so, they would look at that. But even when you have a supported decision-making agreement and a power of attorney, the individual can revoke the power of attorney or this supported decision-making agreement at any time. So even with the power of attorney, you can't make them get treatment if they're refusing, basically. So it's a slippery slope, and it gets slipperier, more slippery if a person has an intellectual disability along with the mental health diagnoses. So if they have an IQ of 70 or below, then it gets a little bit more dicey. But what I'm saying is you definitely want to work with a trusted professional on that. We're happy to make a referral for that. Well, we are out of time for today. This has been a great topic, and we should do this more often, because there are so many families that are really struggling in this area, and from everything, from how to communicate, how to cope, how to help, wanting to help their loved ones. So this is a topic that we need to do more often. We're glad you're here, Angelina. We're glad that you partnered with us, and we'll
Thank
look
you.
forward to
Yes.
partnering with you again soon. You guys can hover over this QR code. You guys are going to get a copy of today's slides and a link to the recording. We're happy to meet with you, and we'll schedule a free personalized consultation, specifically nuanced to where you are and what you've got going on. There's a lot of support out there. There's a lot of support all across the United States, all across the greater Houston area, all across Texas for sure. So part of it was just taking a step. And I would just like to say, yay, everybody here that took the step to be here, because that was a step and a half to just say, I'm dealing with this. And so I'm glad that you are here and that you heard this and learned about NAMI today. So go check out their classes. And Angelina's contact information is on these slides, so you can reach out to her personally. Certainly been my pleasure, everyone. I hope everybody has a great afternoon. Take care.
Thank you.